Our next case for argument this morning is United States v. Schmidt. Ms. Christensen.
May it please the court.
Who knew that a bankruptcy case would attract a large crowd?
I'm surprised they're not staying for mine. I'm always entertaining. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is...
All that in advance, they might not have fled.
I got a few more coming in, so... My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant, William Schmidt, in this matter. Lower sentence was clearly warranted in this case. The district court's refusal to impose a lower sentence was based on its erroneous conclusions about consideration of sentencing disparities, the weight of 3553A factors in child porn cases, and failure to consider all factors appropriately.
But let me ask you this question, because I think actually your brief raises some interesting thoughts about sentencing philosophy, if you will. Any legislature, whether it's Congress or a state legislature, has to make assessments about a whole range of crimes as to how bad they are, you know, whether to criminalize at all, and then if you're going to criminalize, you know, is this something that requires a very heavy period of incarceration? Is this something that requires a light one? Congress has made the judgment with this kind of child pornography that it's quite a serious crime. Maybe the state of Wisconsin has not, but if we're in federal court, I think there are issues that go beyond, if you will, simple sentencing policy that are binding on federal courts. And it seems to me it would be inappropriate for a federal court to say, well, I actually think Congress got it wrong and Wisconsin has a more enlightened penological view of child pornography, and so I'm going to mimic to the greatest extent I possibly can what would happen in the state. You know, that just strikes me as just fundamentally wrong for courts administering federal law, and I don't know how to get away from that. It sounds to me like that's the essence of what you're asking us to do.
Well, I think that that's only one factor. If the disparity and the difference between the federal Congress and Wisconsin were the only factor in the case to consider, I don't think that that's a factor that warrants a lower sentence.
I'm saying something a little stronger. I don't see how that can even be a legitimate consideration. It seems to me if Wisconsin, for whatever reason, you know, perhaps thinks that people who possess child pornography should receive psychological counseling, or Wisconsin has a different impression about it, that's fine. They're a sovereign state. They can do what they want to with their criminal system. But if it's a federal prosecution, surely we can't even say that's a legitimate factor.
I think that there's a lot that goes into the decision whether it's a state prosecution or a federal prosecution. In this case, it's shown in the record that there were 21 other defendants who were investigated by the federal government, including by the same agent. And for whatever reason that's not in the record, they weren't prosecuted by the federal government. I think there should be some recourse for those decisions because it automatically means, in Wisconsin particularly, that a defendant's going to serve astronomically more time.
But that happens in drug cases, it happens in bank robberies, it happens in all kinds of cases where the prosecutors arrange matters as they wish to arrange them. That's a question of prosecutorial discretion that we as courts don't typically interfere with. And some things wind up on the federal side of the, I mean, you're quite right. I mean, if you wind up on this federal side of the table, you're going to get a longer sentence in a lot of, at least the areas I just mentioned. But as long as there is overlapping coverage of these statutes, isn't that just an inevitable consequence of federalism?
I think that it can be balanced by looking at other factors. There's a reason that Congress put in subsection A6 in 3553. It's there for a reason, and it's been slowly eroded. Perhaps before Booker, it was completely eviscerated. And then after Booker, it's starting to make a comeback, but also still being limited. I think it's down to what Congress meant by unwarranted disparities. And there are courts that have argued that it's not simply federal disparities across federal districts and federal judges, that it should be meant to apply to all criminal defendants that are similarly situated. And that's...
But what reason is there to think that Congress, in passing 3553A, was trying to say something about making federal sentences consistent with state sentences? Is there any sign of that?
I think the remainder of 3553 points to some signs, including the factors such as the purposes of sentencing, respect for the law, avoiding unfairness and arbitrariness. There have been district court judges particularly speaking out about this, about the idea that promoting respect for the law, most lay people don't understand there's a difference between state and federal court. And it's often not until you get involved in one or the other, after you've been involved in a different one, that you understand. In our cases, it's most often state to federal, that you understand the different treatment that one gets. And I think if you look at the entire 3553, it was meant to look at the broad range of sentencing and look at all of those considerations that are just not how much punishment a defendant deserves in a category or a box, but how much this particular defendant deserves for this particular offense. This court has noted that district courts can consider disparities, and although it has not yet considered the state-federal disparity issue after Booker, other circuit courts have, and have declined to ban it outright, the consideration of it outright, but have allowed that in extraordinary cases that it can be considered. And in addition to the disparity that's detailed in Mr. Schmidt's case, there are also other reasons that pour into the factors of sentencing in this case that really make Mr. Schmidt a different situation than your average, even state defendant. And in addition to the disparity issue, which the district court refused to consider, the court clearly still views the guidelines as mandatory in child pornography cases. The court mentioned several times the Grigg case, which had been sent down by this court, I think a mere few weeks before Mr. Schmidt's sentencing, where this court asked the same district court judge to explain his reasons for imposing a sentence in a child pornography case. And although the judge repeatedly said the guidelines are advisory, he repeated the same language in the Grigg case in Mr. Schmidt's case. The reasoning that it was irresponsible to set aside the guidelines, that Congress was, quote, damn mad at judges for imposing low sentences for those who hire psychologists. And the court decided not to impose a lower sentence simply because the government would appeal and this court's workload was too high. And while I certainly sympathize with this court's workload, I don't believe that that should be a reason for a district court imposing a guideline sentence, which effectively is going to make the guidelines mandatory again. In addition, the district court did not give full consideration to all of the mitigating factors in Mr. Schmidt's case, effectively finding that the good in a child pornography case can never outweigh the bad, which renders 3553A essentially meaningless in child pornography cases. And unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Let's go.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Kelly Watskin. I represent the United States in this matter.
Ms. Watska, I wonder if you could start with one of the later points Ms. Christensen made, because I have to say I'm quite concerned about what the district court judge said in the sentencing proceeding about the weight he needed to give the guidelines. I'm looking, this shows up as Appendix 26 in the blue brief. It looks like it's page 44 of that day's sentencing transcript. He says, clearly they are not, they meaning the guidelines, they are not mandatory, but for the very reasons I suggested in the court's colloquy in the Gray case, it would border on the irresponsible for a district court judge to set aside the clear intent of Congress in addressing this terrible, terrible scourge and impose sentences in these cases that are outside the sentencing guideline. That sounds very troubling to me. It doesn't sound like a district judge who recognizes that whether it's child pornography or dealing in methamphetamines or robbing banks with guns or anything else, the guidelines are in fact guidelines. He's not irresponsible to look at 3553A seriously, take all those factors into account. So I see, you know, a big thumb on the scale here for the guidelines that I think is inappropriate.
Judge Wood, let me address that question first by saying I think when you look at the record as a whole, it's clear that Judge Stattmuller repeats some of the language that, or some of his comments from the Grigg case in Mr. Schmidt's case. But as a whole, it's clear, at least from the government's perspective, that he understood that he had the discretion to impose a non-guidelines case.
Well, he knows he's... I guess I'm not sure that I'd go that far. I think he knows he has the power to impose a non-guidelines case, just as he had the power in the days before Booker to depart from the guidelines. But I get a sense that he thinks that there are constraints on that power that in fact do not exist.
Respectfully, I would disagree with that characterization of his comments. I think, and I'll direct the court to page 42 of the sentencing transcript, and that's in the middle of the page. You know, the district court is talking about, you know, the context of child pornography cases, that I do have to act with Congress's mandate that these are very serious crimes. They are deserving of severe penalties. And in fact, this court in the Grigg case said, district courts, you need to be respectful of that mandate. But yet,
well, but on the very page you mentioned, though, he says, now that we're a little more than a year out from Booker and Fanfan, sentences within... He sounds like he thinks... this perhaps was infelicitously chosen language on our part, but that sentences within the guidelines are presumptively correct, and if we as trial judges are to impose sentences that are outside those mainstream guidelines, there better be very, very cogent reasons why the court believes it appropriate. Now, what we're doing on appellate review is something quite different from what the district court judges are doing in the first instance in choosing a proper sentence. We've tried to make that clear in quite a few cases of late.
And, Judge, what I think the district court in this matter, Judge Stadmiller, was trying to express in his comments was an understanding and an appreciation of this court's directive in cases like United States versus Dean and United States versus Lawful, that to the extent that the court wants to consider a non-guideline sentence, particularly in the context of a case where Congress has said these fellows ought to be punished severely, there have to be compelling reasons for doing so. And the further there's a variance...
Why do there have to be compelling reasons for doing it? That was the standard before Booker.
Right.
Well, no, Judge, that...
Very good reasons in order to depart from the guidelines. Well, now you don't need very good reasons.
Well, Judge, that the language in United States versus Dean says that to the extent that you want to depart from the advisory guideline range, whether that departure is upward or downward, the greater the variance, the more a judge needs to provide compelling reasons.
You have to explain why. You have to say, you know, this factor of 3553, you need to tie it to the statute. But I don't think there is any presumption at the district court level that you must impose a guideline sentence unless. That's the mistake that I think district judges have made. Now, to say the opposite, which we articulate in Gamma Gonzalez, if a district judge of his own free will, looking at everything, thinks the sensible sentence is one within the guidelines, that's probably going to be a reasonable sentence when we then take a look at it and ask, is it reasonable? But it's pushing it the other way around that's the problem.
And I understand the court's concern, but I think that the record as a whole demonstrates that the district court understood that there were a range of sentences that were available to him, and he spent considerable...
And, of course, there's no minimum sentence with this statute. If Congress really was all that concerned about it, they could have said, you know, 10-year minimum or whatever, 5-year minimum.
That's true, as would be the case in the case of a receipt of child pornography case.
Sure, sure. So they do that when they want to. In this instance, the court didn't have that kind of a signal from Congress, obviously would have complied with any such thing.
And I really think what you're getting at, Judge, and what the district court in this case was getting at, this is really a question of weight. And it's not that the district court said, look, Mr. Schmidt, I disagree with your counsel's representations. You're not a man of good character. You don't have a level of respect in the community. You haven't been employed. You haven't done other good acts. He kind of said, I take that for what it's worth, but I'm weighing these other factors more heavily, and the factors that he weighed more heavily are the serious nature of the offense, the profound impact on the victims of these offenses, and the fact that offenders like Mr. Schmidt are the ones that perpetuate the industry and create a need and a desire for the production of these pornographic images. The need, the hope that a severe penalty in this case would provide general deterrence to others in the community that they're not going to seek out this kind of material. And so I think that the district court, you know, fully considered all of the 3553A factors, but ultimately he placed the greatest amount of weight on those factors. And a 63-month sentence, the bottom of the guideline range, under those circumstances, from the government's perspective, is reasonable.
Well, if he had said all of the things that you just said, it might be a very different case. The problem is he didn't. But we'll see.
I'd like to take a moment to talk about the disparity issue in light of Judge Wood's questions to opposing counsel. I think that 3553A6 does not direct district courts to avoid all sentencing disparity. It only prohibits unwarranted disparity. And disparity is not unwarranted simply because the federal government and one of the 50 states happen to impose different penalties for essentially the same conduct.
And I don't think that's a point you need to argue. We've already said that disparity refers to differences across federal districts and not between the federal government and the states.
Thank you, Your Honor. And it's
water under the bridge in this circuit, at least.
Okay. And for that reason, the examples cited by Mr. Schmidt in terms of state sentences are not particularly relevant or helpful in this case. The other argument that Mr. Schmidt asserts is that there were other mitigating factors that the district court failed to adequately consider or weigh. And respectfully, I disagree with that. First of all, many, if not most, child pornography offenders are educated professionals who enjoy respect in their communities. And in this way, Mr. Schmidt is the ordinary average child pornography offender. There's nothing particularly interesting or compelling about his character, his background, his history in the context of child pornography cases. His lack of a criminal record, his remorse, those were already accounted for in the calculation of his advisory guideline range. Mr. Schmidt also argues that the absence of aggravating factors should mitigate the crime that he actually committed. And from the government's perspective, that's plainly unreasonable. The fact that Mr. Schmidt did not actually produce child pornography or entice a child does not take away or does not entitle him to a sentencing discount for having possessed child pornography. Because, unfortunately, and I see my time is about to run out, so I'll wrap it up, but you can almost always say things could have been worse. And the district court appropriately recognized that the absence of those factors was not a basis for imposing a reduced sentence. I see my time is about up. Unless the court has further questions, I'll simply rest on my brief and ask the court to affirm the sentence in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Christensen?
I first wanted to make sure to point out that the transcript says Gray and means Grig. When the court is referring to the Gray case, it took some figuring out, but it's the Grig case. I think that's just a transcription error. Clearly, about this Grig issue, the district court understood what it had to say. It had to say they were advisory. In the end, what it repeated was exactly what it said in the Grig case, that it would be irresponsible to impose a non-guideline sentence. I didn't address the presumption issue, mostly because it's nearing the end of June and the Supreme Court will decide Rita and perhaps weigh in on that issue. I think it is clear that the presumption does not apply in the district courts, although we are seeing some of that language, which is worrisome because that's not where the presumption is meant to apply from this court's language, as I understand it. And finally, about the seriousness of the offense, the district court seems to be saying that in these cases, non-guideline sentence will never, or a lower than guideline sentence will never be appropriate. Congress has said many offenses are very serious. There are high penalties for all kinds of drug and gun offenses. And if the court's reasoning in child pornography cases were to bleed over into gun and drug offenses, and then to bleed over into financial offenses, then essentially we have the same situation that we had pre-Booker. I have nothing further unless the court has questions. I ask the court to reverse and remand for resentencing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.